Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Robert W. Schneider, and this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Broadway Curtain Podcast. Plus, you can listen to all of our episodes, old and new, on the Broadway Podcast Network, iTunes, and Spotify. My trusty co-host, Kevin David Thomas, is off on assignment, so it's just me today, and boy, am I lucky. Today's guest was one of the most famous faces of the regional summer stock circuit of the 1960s and 70s, working all over this great country in such shows as The Pajama Game, My Fair Lady, Hello Dolly, and countless others. Then in 1976, she burst onto the Broadway stage in the hit revival of Very Good Eddie, for which she received a Tony and Drama Desk nomination, as well as a Theater World Award. To tell us what it was like to work with such legends as Dorothy L'Amour, Ethel Merman, John Raitt, Luigi, and Ray Milland, here is Very Good Eddie's Elsie Darling herself, Virginia Seidel. So, Virginia, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so happy that you're here. You have worked with some of the greatest entertainers that have ever walked this earth. And we're going to talk about them in a little bit in a second. People like Dorothy L'Amour and Sheila McRae. And I mean, the list is, your list goes on and on. And then I believe you did Call Me Madam with Ethel Merman at some point.
Yes. My very first summer where I got my equity card was in 1968 at the St. Louis Muni Opera. And yes, Miss Merman indeed played Mrs. Sally Adams.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask
of your company.
I love this. I'm going to ask you all about that. So first, where did you grow up, Virginia?
I grew up in a south suburb of Chicago, an old suburb. Fortunately, we were right on the Illinois Central commuter line. So a lot of people could just walk to the train to get to what we call the Loop, Chicago's downtown. My mom was a small town dancing teacher. And when, you know, I really turned out to be sort of a brat at the studio when she was teaching. So by the time I was like, you know, I'd say 9 or 10, she would take me down to Chicago to study with some really great ballet teachers in Chicago. So I was fortunate. I had very good ballet training from those Chicago teachers. And really, that's how I ended up getting the Muni Opera job in the dance ensemble.
Now, when you were in Chicago, did you work for George Balanchine?
Oh, when I was, yes. Well, actually, fortunately, one of my mother's students, she was the niece of Vida Brown. Now, Vida Brown at that time was George Balanchine's ballet mistress. So, see, New York City Ballet, when they did the Nutcracker, here in the mid 50s, only 2 years they brought it to Chicago, not at the Christmas holidays, but in like March, but people still loved it. So they, of course, did not bring their children. So they had auditions at the Opera House. And I think I did see a clipping that 2,000 children auditioned.
Oh, wow.
And 50 were chosen. And I wonder why I was chosen. Four of us from my mom's little dancing school were in the Nutcracker. And I recall Balanchine around my mother. Of course, the adults were more aware of what was happening backstage. But that was really a thrill. That was a super thing. And that's what got my mom to then have me study. Of course, when you're 9 or 10, study is not quite the right word, you know, but taking with the big schools in Chicago. Yeah. And then when I got to be a little older, see, I could just take the train.
Ah, I see. Now, at the same time that you were doing or entering the ballet world, were you also mm-hmm. seeing any musical theater performances that were coming through Chicago at this time?
Well, you know, that is kind of, I didn't get to, we didn't. I'm sure my mom would have loved it, but we did go down to see the Bolshoi Ballet Theater. I never saw one of those touring shows. I remember when Carol Channing came through with Dolly.
Uh-huh.
I was maybe in eighth grade, freshman, and I was going to go with some girlfriend and boyfriends, but we never made it, no.
Okay. What was it about the world of ballet that appealed to you so much?
Well, I guess, you know, it was a lot of fun because, you know, when I was younger, my mom and I would go downtown, and after my lesson, you know, we'd go to Marshall Fields, the beautiful department store, and we would have a little lunch at Stouffer's, you know, these really, it would just be kind of a fun outing. And it wasn't really till I was in high school that I was going downtown 3 times a week.
Okay. Know? Okay.
Like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Okay. So now, how did you get from performing in ballet and high school shows to doing the Muni?
Well, fortunately, the teacher that I was mainly with, Keith Allison, he had been in ballet theater. And, you know, ballet, especially back then, was a small world. And a man named Harding Dorn was also in ballet theater, I think. And whereas Keith became a Chicago ballet teacher, Harding was a choreographer. And he was the choreographer at Kansas City Starlight. And I auditioned for him in Chicago. See, some of those big summer stock, they would come to Chicago, to not just New York. They'd come to Chicago to audition people. So I auditioned for Harding for Kansas City Starlight. And he was very nice. He said, you know, please keep working and studying. He said, you're too young, you know, for the shows we're doing, the way the ensemble has to be, you won't fit in. So my teacher was like, oh, wow, Harding, he liked you. That's something, you know. So, because actually my teacher had sent other dancers to the audition.
Okay.
He didn't send me, but I had a friend in Equity, and I knew you could call the Chicago Equity office and say, oh, are there any auditions coming up? And see, they wouldn't ask me if I was a member.
Ah. And
they told me about Kansas City Starlight. So my manager was like, oh, well, you went to that audition and Harding liked you. Oh, well, oh, you know. But then Muni Opera had an audition, but that was in St. Louis. So wow. Here we go, Chicago. So my friend Donna and I, we really wanted to go. And we thought, oh, how are we going to get there? Oh, gosh, you know, St. Louis. And now in those days, they had something called student standby on the airlines.
Oh. Where
you would just go to the airport, sign in that you wanted to go from on the flight from Chicago to St. Louis. And Donna and I both got on. It was $15. I swear, $15 student fare to St. Louis. We stayed at a Hilton Inn by the airport. We didn't know. And then We took a taxi the next morning to the huge, Buell Hall, you know, one of those big, huge places. And it was so exciting because, you know, Crandall Deal was there, who was the My Fair Lady choreographer. It was a few, they had a resident choreographer, but they also, for special shows, they brought Jamie Jameson, who was DeMille's Brigadoon man. So we went through the whole audition and then we flew back to Chicago. And 2 weeks later, they said, well, you have a callback. So we did the whole thing over again. So we both joined Equity on May 1st, 1968.
Oh my gosh.
Which was really a thrill.
Now, wait, how did your family feel about this?
I think they thought it was fine. I mean, I was 19, you know, and the Muni was so reputable and there wasn't ever any problems. I mean, that I knew of, you know.
Yeah.
We stayed at a great old hotel, you know, for like, we had a suite, you know, a kitchen and a corner room and it was like $25 a week or something.
Oh, fantastic. I would take that now, to be honest with you. Now, I'm so curious, like when you were at the Muni, were you part of a general dance company that was doing all the shows?
Or
were you? Okay. So what was the first season of shows while you were there? Or what shows did you do there?
Well, My Fair Lady was first with Douglas Fairbanks Jr. Very handsome. Wonderful. Eddie Albert was totally great. Margot Mosier, she had been a Julie replacement on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And so now that was a big deal. And that was directed by James Hammerstein, Jimmy Hammerstein, son of.
You know.
That show, because that was our first show, we could just rehearse like crazy, like for 2 weeks, lots of big scenes. And we played for 2 weeks. Most of the shows after that, we only rehearsed a week, played a week. But the other shows were Brigadoon with Anne Blythe.
Oh my gosh.
Bill Hayes, who was actually from my hometown, Call Me Madam, with Russell Knipe and Miss Merman. And Donna McKechnie.
Fun.
Donna was in that. I still am in touch with Donna. Wizard of Oz. Oh, Annie Gets Your Gun with Kay Stevens. What's her name?
Okay.
Oh, Pajama Game with John Raitt, for heaven's sakes.
Okay, so, this is pretty legendary. Now, had you been to New York prior to this by any chance for like a vacation or anything? Or
yes. I was very fortunate with my mom's side of the family. I had a great aunt and an aunt and a cousin who lived in Manhattan. So a few Easter vacations, my mother and I would come to New York. Now I was like 8, 9, 10. So we didn't see any shows. I guess I was just too young, you know, to go. I did go to the circus, the Ringling Brothers and Central Park. And Schraff's, of course, that was
okay.
Good. Well, when I was a freshman in high school, my mom said, well, we could go to New York and stay in Aunt Pauline's studio because she goes away for the summer. So I studied at the Joffrey School, which was in the West Village then for 3 weeks. So I was, you know, it was my mom and me. And when we came that first summer when I was at the Joffrey, my mom would go to Wednesday matinees because I was gone at the studio all day. And when I got back, she said, oh, Jenny, she said, I saw the most wonderful show. I want you to see it. So we'll go on Saturday matinee. She loves me. That's the first Broadway show I saw.
Oh my gosh, boy, you're lucky.
And then when I graduated from high school, I came by myself, and that's when I stayed at Pauline's, Aunt Pauline's, and studied at the Harkness School for a month.
What is the Harkness School?
Well, Rebecca Harkness was this very wealthy lady. I think she was an oil heiress. She was like totally obsessed with ballet. She used to study ballet, and of course she could basically buy a ballet company, which is kind of what she did. And she was supporting the Joffrey Ballet financially, but then she wanted more and more control. And Robert Joffrey was like, no, you know, I'm the ballet master.
Yeah.
I can't. So she started her own company because she had enough money to do that. And it had a pretty good run, did some beautiful ballets, but I think eventually it just crumbled in financial crisis.
Gotcha.
But I did audition for How Now, Dow Jones.
Oh.
Because they had opened, you know, I wasn't in the union yet.
Yeah.
So I could audition for Jack Cole, the famous choreographer. And I didn't get very far, actually.
That's okay.
Oh, wait. And Mata Hari. Those were two.
Oh, wow.
They were both kind of flops, I guess. I think How Now, Dow Jones went a little further.
Yeah. So you could just, without being a member of Actors Equity, you could just go to an open dance call. And was this done on the stage of a theater?
Yep.
So that's pretty exciting.
Very cool. Because that doesn't even, I don't think that happens now.
Oh, God, no.
It's in studios now, big studios or something.
Yeah. What's it like to be on a Broadway stage?
Well, you know, it was just so huge. I remember being so huge with the flies are open, the wings, but was plenty of room for the, have us call us all out, you know, to do our fifth position, grand moment to the sides and everything like that. But like, I didn't get, although, you know, what was that other show? Oh, The Happy Time.
Oh.
And that was Gower Champion, right?
Yes, it was.
I got a callback to that.
Oh.
I did. Amazing. That was my big, you know, my big thing.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the people that you mentioned before that you got to work with at the Muni. So what was it like to watch Ethel Merman or to watch John Ray? Did you learn anything, any fun anecdotes about watching these people perform?
Well, you know, at Muni, the way it was kind of run almost on a military.
Yes, tell us. Yes.
You know, get it. So on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the dancers would be on the dance pavilion, which was outside, you know, a covered thing. The singers would be in the piano, you know, inside the music room. The principals would be on their own, maybe at the Chase Park Hotel or something nice, you know. Then by Thursday, maybe even by Friday, we were all brought together to have a run through. Finally, all the parts working in the huge, another pavilion. And Miss Merman, I thought, that's terrible. I thought, oh, she's so old. I
mean, no.
You know, I thought, oh, she's so old. And she was not big. She's not tall. She's not tall at all. She wore very high heels and dressed in a very pretty dress for rehearsal. But when we were running through the numbers and even her dialogue, she whispered.
Interesting.
Yeah, she did not full voice at all. And even then we had our orchestra rehearsal. She may have sung a little bit, but then there was one big number we did where we had all of this dancing and lifts. And Donna McKechnie was a principal. She was the princess. And when the number was over, there was a lot of hubbub, you know, with the powers that be. And pretty soon our choreographer came over to Donna and the rest 24 of us. And he said, we're not going to do that dance because she was right. It was just too distracting. You know, she did not want, these people jumping around.
She knew.
And she liked beer.
She liked beer?
Beer. She drank beer.
Well, I would love to have gotten a beer with Ethel Merman.
Yes. I think they must have gone out a little bit, you know. And John Raitt, he was very, so good. And his daughter, Bonnie, she came down and we thought, oh, that's his daughter. She's a singer.
So this is fantastic. So now, you're working with all of these legends and you don't really even have to leave your own backyard to do it. You don't have to come up to New York.
Yes,
so you're getting an education. Okay, so now you're done with this season at Muni. Do you go back to Illinois or do you go and try New York?
There were inklings like, what should I do? This and that, because three of my girlfriends who happened to all live in St. Louis, they were going to New York. That was it. They had done Muni when they were like 16, 17, 18. So they were through with Muni Opera. I mean, as much as they loved it.
Got it.
But when I got back to Harvey, there was an audition for an Equity Dinner Theater.
Uh-huh.
That was the heyday of dinner theaters. I don't know if you're aware of the dinner theater.
Yeah, tell us.
Well, at one time, there were 80 Equity Dinner Theaters in the States. I think it's shrunk to maybe under 20, if that, you know, things change, you know, other entertainment things. So I did South Pacific, ensemble, and then Sweet Charity, which was a lot of fun. So I was making some money living at home. Then I did a couple of industrial shows. And then I thought, I want to go to New York to visit, you know, because I could stay at Aunt Pauline's in New York, a small, you know, a little studio, and see my girlfriends and see shows. And that is funny that Luigi was the big jazz teacher then for many years before and after. So I was taking class from Luigi. Also, he was recommended to me because if you were a ballet trained person and you needed to transition to doing more Broadway style, it was good to go to Luigi because his jazz was very lyrical based and he knew how to get ballet people to be a little jazzy, to be jazzier. So I was taking class there, and after the class one day, in the dressing room, some of the dancers, they were chatting about going to an audition for Take Me Along and Irma LaDuce at the Meadowbrook Dinner Theater. Again, dinner theater. And I was just there getting dressed, and one of them said to me, are you going to that audition? I said, well, I'm just visiting. I said, I don't really know. They said, well, you should go. You should go with us. I said, okay. So that was Louisa Flanagan. I always try to remind her of that.
Lovely.
And, you know, it was a simple dance combination. And, you know, we learned it a few times. And then they call you up five at a time. And it was a kind of a long, narrow room. And I thought, the choreographer, he didn't see me because I was on the end of five girls. And so, you know, then they said we could go out. And then when I was outside, this tall man, Marvin Sprague, he came out and said, we'd like you to read for a part. I said, okay. I thought, well, that's odd. And, you know, they hardly looked at me and read for a part. So then I was waiting in the little waiting room and he came out and handed me a script. And it was for Muriel in Take Me Along, which is the ingenue in Ah Wilderness. You know, Take Me Along is the musical version of Ah Wilderness. So I was reading it. And then in the meantime, there were actresses coming in who were all dressed, you know, they were dressed as to be for the part. And I was a little confused. And I went over to one of them, wanted to ask a question. And she had her script. She went, I'm not here for chorus. I'm here for a part.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
Robert, I'm here for a part. I went, okay. So I went and sat down. And so they were auditioning some of these other young women. And pretty soon Marvin Sprague, who was the stage manager, big, big, tall guy, he came out and he said, Virginia, are you ready? And I said, I don't know. I haven't memorized this yet. And he said, you haven't? He said, well, you know, we don't have all day. He said, you're just going to have to come in right now and audition. So he brings me in, and there's Stuart Bishop and Jimmy Smock and Clyde Lawrence, everybody's there. And as I started, you know, I was standing there feeling kind of nervous. He said, Virginia has just informed me, she is very sorry, but she has not memorized the script. And they burst out laughing, like they were hysterical. They were hysterical laughing. I thought, oh no. So Stuart Bishop, God bless him, he got up from behind the thing. He said, Virginia, he said, you know, at our audition, you don't have to memorize a script. He said, you just read, you read your part. And as soon as the other person stops talking, he said, you read.
I love this.
Your next part. Oh, Robert, honest to God, when I did that and I went out, Marvin came out again. He said, do you have a job now? What are you doing? I said, no, I'm just visiting New York. He said, you are? I said, well, he said, listen, it looks pretty good for you. They called me that night.
Get out.
So wasn't that was beginner's luck. That's what I tell people.
And an incredible amount of talent as well, but we'll say beginner's luck for now. What was your go-to audition song?
You know, again, because it was not a singer, I would sing simple songs and sometimes like 1920 songs, because that sort of suited me. Everybody Loves My Baby.
Okay.
Loves My Baby, but My Baby don't, there's hardly any notes there. You know what I mean? The range.
Yes.
Oh, and then of course there was the era where you'd get an audition. They'd say, sing a rock song. Well, please. I mean, this was out of the question. I had an agent. So I would sing Frank Mills.
Okay.
Which is, it's a rock song, but it's a ballad. So that was my excuse, you know.
I love that. Can you walk us through a little bit about how dinner theater operated? Because I think for a lot of our younger listeners, they might not know what that is.
Sure. Well, now Meadowbrook, which was in New Jersey, so it had been known as a big nightclub in the swing era, the 40s, 50s. It was already an established venue for nightclub people and a restaurant. So when the dinner theater started there, people would be at their table. They would order from a menu, have dinner, then that would be cleared away, and they might have their coffee or a cocktail or something. But generally, it was very quiet, you know. Then you do the show. So now Meadowbrook was great because it was only 5 nights, you know, Wednesday through maybe a Sunday mat. Now other dinner theaters, they would be buffet. So people would go through the buffet and eat. Yeah, I mean, there was the Chateau de Viles. It was the Chateau de Villes in the Boston area. That was Sylvia Sims' Hello Dolly that I did there, the nightclub lady. See, my first Dolly was with Dorothy L'Amour at Milwaukee Melody Top.
Dorothy L'Amour?
Yes, that because Dorothy was one of the real happening dollies, you know. Vegas Dolly. And see, a lot of the people, the principals, well, ensemble too, that I worked with, they had either been on Broadway with Channing, Merman, on tour, you know. That show was so huge.
Yeah.
Days.
Now, when you were doing Dolly, were you in the ensemble or were you playing?
Oh, I was Minnie. I was Minnie Faye.
Okay.
Again, you know, it was just a perfect part for me because I hadn't really studied that much voice, you know, but both Muriel and Minnie, you know, they sing, but it's not demanding, you know. It's not a big belting thing. It's not, you don't have to have a beautiful high soprano. So that was fortunate that I could always, go to my teacher or coach to work on the music.
I know it's always hard when you're in the middle of these shows because you're so focused on your character, but was there anything that you were learning about the craft of acting or performing from either someone like a Dorothy L'Amour or some of the directors that you were working with that you still take with you to this day?
I remember Stuart Bishop. So he was my first director. I would, you know, take me along. Oh, and then the next show was The Boyfriend with Joan Bennett as Madame Dubinet and Leland Palmer, who is a wonderful dancer, actress, singer, Leland. She was Maisie, and she she was quite known. Well, she still would be when she retired. So Stuart, when he would give us the other girl, the other ladies, you know, at the finishing school, he would advise us to watch Leland. He said, because she has economy of movement.
Ah.
And because she was a great dancer. But even when, you know, in the scenes, he said, watch her, the economy of movement. She doesn't do any extra fluttering around. And, you know, she always is very, you know, clear. And Bill Guile, my very good Eddie director, I guess it was still the same thing. You know, when I made my first entrance, then I was supposed to hold hands with Nick Wyman and say, oh, sweetheart, the audience would laugh a little bit. But soon Bill said, you know, Virginia, when you come on stage, he said, you go up to Nick, but make a circle like you're looking at your surroundings, like, oh, you see him, but you're making a circle, and then say, oh, sweetheart. Well, the difference in the laugh was just incredible.
I mean, oh, you know, great.
Because he said, I want the audience to really look at you.
Hello, this is Betty Davis. Not the young one, the old one. I've been on matches.com looking for a gentleman who might like to date an actress who loves to smoke and who had a black and white career. And I thought, why am I wasting my money on this when I could merely donate it to those boys at Behind the Curtain? Go to patreon.com and give all you can. God knows they need it. And do it before you're 122 years old. That's Patreon.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
What do you look for out of a director or a choreographer?
Well, I guess it's nice if they're, especially a lot of things I've done, the rehearsal period, you know, it's not long.
Yeah.
If they're prepared, or at least, you know, they might have something prepared and maybe they teach it and it isn't right. They can adjust it. But to come in cold, unprepared, then people stand around and then people start, you know, making faces and probably. And I guess directors too, you know, maybe
sure
have an idea, maybe with blocking, maybe it'll change, but I guess have a plan, you know, just if you have a plan, so it can always change. Yes.
It can always change, but at least there's something to change.
Yes, yes.
At least there's something there. Now, let's talk about Very Good Eddie. How did that come into your world?
Well, in 72, I had an agent and they sent me to the Goodspeed Opera auditions for Good News.
Uh-huh.
And I got principal roles in both of those shows. And it was just a blast doing good. So many great songs in Good News. Oh my goodness. Just Imagine, Button Up Your Overcoat.
It's a great score.
It was such fun. Jim Brochue was in there.
Oh, Jim.
Jim, love him. He lives in the other building. I
love him.
Oh, Jim, he's a doll.
These shows were older.
Yes.
At a time when we were having Company and Hair and all these rock shows.
Yes.
Why was Goodspeed bringing back these older shows from the 10s and 20s?
Well, Goodspeed, I think, you know, first of all, the theater is just a jewel. It's an old, I think, 1876 opera house on the Connecticut River, had been used. And then, of course, when the steamboats stopped going up, it became a warehouse. It was derelict. And at some point, the state of Connecticut and probably some benefactors, they fixed it up. Because La Mancha started there, Man of La Mancha. That got them set. And then I think they just decided to do old shows. And that's what they did for many years. Well, that summer was good news. Then Sunny, which starred Leland Palmer and David Christmas, dear friend of mine, just passed on. And Where's Charlie? They did Where's Charlie? So that was the three for that summer. Then it was 2 years later that they were doing Miss Liberty and Very Good Eddie. And they had a wonderful orchestrator who would work with the old scores, put them together. And David Tozer, the costumer, they just knew how to present these. And of course, there were cuts to the scripts and maybe other songs put in, you know, that were from the same composer.
And for our listeners who might be unfamiliar with Very Good Eddie, what was your role and in this wonderful show?
Well, my part was Elsie Darling, and Charlie Repley was Eddie, of the Very Good Eddie. And it was really just one of those kind of a mix-up of couples getting mixed up on the boat going up the Hudson River, the honeymoon, and silly things. But again, you know, Jerome Kern, even though a lot of the music is not that known today, because he wrote it in 17, I think, 1960, one of his really first shows. Babes in the Wood, I guess, would be it's a lullaby that people know, but very, very fun and very danceable, very, very danceable. And of course, Goodspeed had an orchestra too, which some
nice.
Don't always see anymore.
You know? No, that is true. That is true. And you got to work with Charlie
Repley, yes.
The great Nick Wyman.
Oh, Nick. Oh, I basically played opposite Charlie and Nick. And then Fairbank, the same. We were the mixed up couple. I was supposed to be married to Nick, who was very tall, and I'm small. Spring was tall, married to Charlie. So with the mix-ups of those kind of old shows, we ended up together with the right partner.
Did you have an inkling that this charming little show was going to go to Broadway?
Well, when Very Good Eddie was done that summer, I was not in it. I didn't audition. And, oh, I know. Then I was doing a production of Dames at Sea, at the Bucks County Playhouse, which was quite a old, nice summer theater. I was doing that with Jack Gardner. And we had, you know, again, you rehearse a week and running and everything. And we were in a restaurant, and Jack had the Daily News, and it was Rex Reed's column. And he was all excited. He said, "Oh, listen, guys," he said, "my friend Charlie Repley is in this show at Goodspeed called Very Good Eddie." And he said, "Rex went up to see it and reviewed it." And he said, that's really something. You know, the New York critics did not come to Goodspeed. Yeah. They might come, but they didn't review ever, you know. So I thought, oh, well, that's nice, you know. So then our show, Dames was over, Very Good Eddie was over, because the next show was coming in. But then Michael Price thought, well, hey, you know, we're getting a lot of interest from New York producers, so we need to bring the show back in October. And Jill Choder had my part, and then there were like maybe four other people, but it was not a sure thing it would come back in October. So they got other jobs. And Jill had gotten a musical version of Boccaccio. And if I say that right, Boccaccio, which was being done in DC to come to Broadway, Broadway show. So Goodspeed was having auditions for Elsie and I think like the four other replacements they needed. So I got the part. So I was like, oh, everybody knows this show. I've got to, again, me not always, I needed to work with a coach. I learned all the music before I went up for rehearsal. And then it just kind of fell into place. I was accustomed to Goodspeed, Michael Price and Bill, of course, and from, but I did not know Dan Ceretta, who was our choreographer. I had just met him. And we would run and we'd only do like five shows a week and go back. And then Michael said, well, we're going to extend. It was very interesting how the Opera House was available and they kept hearing of people coming. And then one night in the second act, was a hotel, it was a balcony. And there's a, you know, little sets you can see, you can peek. And that night, Michael was running around in the dressing rooms and he'd stick his head in the door of each dressing room and say, and he said, the whole world's here tonight. and Charlie okay. saying, shut up, you know, stop, you know, telling us this. But that's all he said, the whole world's here. And then we did the show. But then at the curtain call, I was still up in behind my little room. And so when the curtain call started, I was looking out and I saw David Merrick in the audience. He was like fifth row on the aisle. I mean, you can't miss him. I mean, he was a tall man with, you know, a dark mustache and he was applauding. And while he was applauding, he was turning around. And the person he was turning around to was Bernard Jacobs, Mr. Schubert man, you know. So that was it. They just said, we're taking the show to Broadway. Now, again, that happens, really, Robert, you know, because they had the booth. The booth was empty. It was next to Chorus Line. What could be a better spot? It'd be right on the Schubert Alley. It's just a matter of like, a couple of weeks. And then that was it.
And what was it like to make your Broadway debut?
Well, just seemed like it all, we were all set. And then we rehearsed at the New York School of Ballet, which had been, you know, George Balanchine's old studio. And we opened like on the fourth night. So it was very fast. And then we got great reviews. See, we were already assured because, well, Rex Reed from the summer, right? It was really Reed that lit the fire. But Clive Barnes had come up to see the show. And in fact, we were there at Halloween and we planned this big party and I had a Playboy Bunny costume from a friend. So I
had Playboy
Bunny. I couldn't eat. So I had to take it off after a while. it's so tight, you know.
Love it. Love it.
And Charlie, he had a white T-shirt and he had with magic pen, what do you call it? A Sharpie. He printed the Clive Barnes review on that T-shirt and he made a mask, what do you call it? Decoupage.
Yes.
Of the New York Times. And then it had a thing that stuck up and said the New York Times. That was his Halloween costume.
Oh, funny. Very funny. Now, not only does the show, it gets nice reviews, but you also got some awards and nominations. Is that correct?
That is so true.
First time on Broadway?
Oh, yes. It was just so incredible. Charlie and I were the two performers. We were nominated in Best Featured, which is fine with us.
For Tonys,
And Bill Guile was director and Danny Ceretta, choreographer. So the four of us. Like I say, it was wonderful that we were the same year as Chorus Line.
Yeah.
Right next to them. Plus, you knew you didn't have to worry about an acceptance speech because you knew you wouldn't be.
Sure.
I mean, you know, in fact, the Tonys were held in the Schubert.
Oh.
So they did. The Tonys that year opened with the Chorus Line number, you know, da 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 da, you know.
Yeah.
And Kelly Bishop won. and Sammy Williams won for Charlie, and of course Michael Bennett won both things.
So. Yes. But you also got a Drama Desk nomination, is that right?
Yes. That was really fun. But the Theater World Awards. Like 10 people each year.
Yeah.
And back then they would have a big party, you know, with champagne. And, you know, that was Christopher Walken gave me my Theater World
Award. Oh, that's pretty special.
Yeah. He's a pretty, I always say he's the shining example of a dancer who really stepped into film and made quite a career. There's not that many, you know.
It's small numbers. So after Very Good Eddie closes, then tell me about your journey.
Well, I did go on the national tour, which was fun. And then I had good agents. You know, I did do a lot of commercials.
What products?
Oh, gosh. Twix.
Ah.
Candy bar. And that was choreographed by Wayne Cilento. And Wayne, you know, created a role in I Can Do That.
Yes. How cool is that?
That's Wayne. And my husband, my late husband, Todd Miller, we got to do two Dames at Seas. I would be Ruby and he would be Lucky because he was such a really great tapper.
Yeah.
Did that regionally in Springfield, Massachusetts, and the wonderful Summerstock Barter Theater in Virginia. And I had done other Rubies. I always say, you know, really, Bernadette was instrumental in my career because, Bernadette did Ruby, you know, Dames at Sea.
Yeah.
She had been a child performer before that, but Dames at Sea really. And so her type became popular, like you were saying, nostalgia and 1920s. And that's what Bernadette did.
Yeah.
Of course, Bernadette could not do all the Dames at Sea's companies. So myself and some other lucky, somewhat similar to Bernadette got jobs because of her. It's true.
Thank you, Bernadette.
I did Playwrights Horizon. You know, they did the satire, Oh, What a Lovely War.
Yeah.
And I was involved in a show that almost made it to Broadway called Going Hollywood.
Ah.
Jonathan Sheffer, composer, and David Zippel lyrics.
Yes.
We had a Schubert-funded workshop. First of all, we did backers auditions with Harvey Evans, Peter Evans, Christy Nebersole.
It's a great group, my God.
Ray, we rehearsed for like 2 days with our scripts. And then these backers auditions, they were very exciting. Again, attended by everybody. And then the Schuberts decided, well, this show is worth doing a whole workshop. And that's what Dolores was in. And Christy Nebersole. Oh, and Jerry Mitchell was in the ensemble.
Our favorite
Jerry. It was like, and, you know, he's so tall and handsome still, but, you know, everybody loved Jerry. So, and then, you know, Robert, it's just one of those things about timing and what else is opening. Twyla Tharp, she decided to do Singing in the Rain. As I understand it, she basically took the choreography from the film. They put the film on stage. That's what it was. Now, Singing in the Rain, it draws from, our show was based on Once in a Lifetime, which is about the transition from talkies, from silence to talkies. And that came first before Singing in the Rain. But Singing in the Rain is the same thing. And Singing in the Rain opened. It did not get good reviews. It didn't run. But then our show, which, you know what, with Christine Ebersole, come on. She was just getting known then. It collapsed. It did not go to Broadway. And I blame Singing in the Rain because the source material was the same.
So did you ever, as time goes on, did you ever start to teach at anywhere, or were you always focused on performing?
I think I would have really liked to have taught, but I didn't really have much opportunity because of, you know, when you're auditioning for commercials and it's just in those days, you know, you'd have maybe two or three auditions a day. And then if you booked some, you know, you were always auditioning for other things. And, but I did happily, now it's probably been 10 years. I had a good friend who, what do you say, adjunct professor up at the first Cooney School.
Oh, okay.
It's a gorgeous old bill. It's a beautiful old place. It's very famous. But they had a theater department, and she taught speech and musical theater. And she was able to get a budget for me to come up and teach theater dance a few times. And I loved the kids. They were so great. The guys, they were game, you know, they weren't dancers. Really, no one was a dancer, but I knew enough to do things that they could do. And
amazing. Now, tell us a little bit about your work with dancers over 40.
Oh, dancers over 40, yes. Well, I always say no one joins till they're at least 47.
Great. Okay. I love that.
Gosh, I guess I don't know if I joined right away, but I had good friends who were involved in it. And then it was what's really been nice about it is that, because this was before the internet when it started. So there would be these parties and get-togethers, small concerts where you could reconnect with people you hadn't seen for a long time. Yeah. I think it's a good organization. It's small, you know, small nonprofit, but they've done a lot of really good things. They preserve things for Lincoln Center, for the library.
Yes, but you also received a pretty big award from them. Did you know?
Oh, that's right. The Legacy Award.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Yes, in 18, I think 18.
Well, congratulations, and deserved.
Oh, it was fun. They picked like, I don't know, maybe four people to honor, and it's always at a fun dinner, and everybody has a blast, you know. Yes.
Well, I am so happy that you won it. It's a fantastic organization. The question we always ask people towards the end of our interviews is the same one I'm going to ask you, which is, what do you know now as a performer that maybe you wished you had known when you first started out, when you first came to New York City?
Oh, gosh. I was so lucky that I came with my equity card, right? I realize now that was very big that I came here with my union card so I could go to auditions. I had my family here, my mom's side. But I guess, well, for Dancers Over 40, they asked a similar thing. And I just said for young people, you know, there's the Episcopal Actors Guild, which is very inexpensive to join. It's for all, what do they say, all faiths or none. They have a guild hall. They have lots, even through the whole pandemic. They have actors nights. You can discount resumes and pictures. It's just such a great community for anybody, but especially young people coming that might not have a network. And also actually Dancers Over 40 is open to young people too.
This is great advice.
Just simple things. You
know what? Sometimes those simple things are the things that we need the most. Virginia, it has been such an absolute joy and pleasure getting to talk to you today. Thank you so, so much for sharing your story with us.
Well, the same here, Robert. Very fun. Very fun.
All right. Take care. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. And a big thanks to the punchy players, Jeff Marquis, who is bringing back Lucy, Betty, Judy, and Morda shill for us.
And a big thanks to our sound editor, Daniel Schwartzberg, and social media manager, Bethany Ann Selecki.
And don't forget, we want more folks to hear these incredible stories, and that's where you come in.
In order for people to find out about us, we need lots of ratings on iTunes. So head on over to iTunes, search for Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends, click on our logo, click on ratings and reviews, then write a review and leave us 5 stars and make us feel as special as Eliza Doolittle on Eliza Doolittle Day.
Or you can leave us just 1 star and you can make us feel as bad as Annie did in that really weird production in Boston where Annie dreamt that she was being adopted, but then she ended up back where in the orphanage, right back where she started. Yeah, true story. Rob saw it.
Yes, and it was Batty. It was bizarre. I was there. I was.
Oh, good.
So head on over to iTunes and make us feel even more special than we already do.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.